Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 79.
And if this is your first time joining us, welcome.
Welcome.
Because I don't have anything weird and unhinged thing to say this week, as I normally would.
So welcome to the wackadoodles and the doodle whackers, everybody in between.
And all the other things, I guess. So we watched Terrifier over the weekend. We haven't watched the second one yet because we figured as much hype as the third one that just recently came out, I think, what was it, just this past Friday?
Yeah.
Is getting all this hype. It's like, we might as well finally watch those. But, you know, this time we're going to skip talking about scenes and whatnot, just in case, because since there's this huge surge of popularity in it, we're not going to try and spoil it for anybody
has
considered watching it. But
it was good. I knew about 8, maybe 10 minutes in that you were going to like it. And that's about when you turn and you're like, you're watching it without me?
Yep. Because I just heard somebody yelling. I was like, what is she watching? And I turn around just in time for Art the Clown to come on. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You're watching this without me. This is some bullshit. And then she restarted it so I can watch it with her.
Yeah, because it was, 8 minutes in, so.
Yep. Yeah. So, well, maybe we'll have to watch the second one later.
Maybe.
Or here soon before spook season ends.
Yep.
What?
You know? I'd like to get a few scary movies in.
Yep.
Before spooky season ends.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of spooky black cats and everything, Salem's trying to tear up the Emporium here, sounds like.
He is.
Oh, usually. And then his orange dummy brother, usually the one really wrecking stuff, even though he's been on this weird streak of sitting in me in weird positions.
Yeah.
It's like legs stretched out. He has to sit on my feet. Like, actually on my feet, what do you expect for an orange cat?
Not much. He definitely didn't get the collective brain cell lately.
No, it's been skipping him quite a bit lately.
As he stares at the wall.
Yep. Anyhow. So this week I have a true crime case, and this is, I guess you could say, I don't know how to put it. I mean, it's a true crime case. It's my usual mass shooters and whatnot and I'm doing. But I've had this one on my list ever since I'd done James Huberty 2 years ago.
I remember you telling me the name of the place, but
right.
I don't know anything about it.
It's the Luby's cafeteria shooting is what I'm doing this week, but I've been putting it off on hold.
Why?
Because why have I been putting it off on hold? Two reasons. One, it's been harder than hell to try and find information about timelines and stuff about like other mass shootings I have done.
Mm-hmm.
And two, this episode actually is going to be released on the 33rd anniversary of it. Which some people might find that inconsiderate, but we also talk about the bombing of Pearl Harbor every year comes around. Mm-hmm. We also talk about the JFK assassination every year comes around. And for our generation, 9/11, we talk about that every year when it comes around. So I felt this is no different.
It's history.
Yep. And it's also Boss's Day.
Yep.
Well, before we get into that, we can have our On This Day.
Oh, wait. We forgot to say that this was a Davisode.
Oh, yeah. It's a Davisode, obviously. Not at this point. I'm sure you guys figured that out.
Duh.
So for On This Day, October 16th, 2024, American lexicographer Noah Webster was born in West Hartford, Connecticut in 1758. A lexicographer compiles dictionaries.
I was going to say, what's a lexicographer?
The David Letterman Show ran its 1700th episode in 1992. His show would come to an end after 23 seasons and 4,214 episodes, and it ended on May 20th, 2015.
Doesn't he look like a bearded wild man now and lives in like southern Indiana or something?
Something like that, but he has enough money to own his own Indy League racing team, so there is that.
I mean, yeah.
Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You becomes a number one country hit in 1974 and then goes back to the top spot thanks to its use in the movie The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. This makes it the first song to top the chart twice in 1982.
Huh. At two different times in 82? Yep. Okay. Go, Dolly.
Yep. In 1987, defending champion Mike Tyson beats Tyrell Briggs and by total complete knockout in round 7 at the Convention Center in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and it retained the unified heavyweight boxing title. In 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis begins and lasts for 13 days after President JFK is shown photos confirming the presence of Soviet missiles in Cuba. Might be one of those things put on my list there. Because we've always heard of it, you know, we don't really know too much of it because we're not really taught about that in school in our age group.
I had to... This past weekend, I meant to tell you that you talking about that brought it up. The Henry Ford show that's on early Sunday mornings, they one of the parts that they were doing was when Mail by Rocket was big, but I fell asleep before it came
on. And I was like, oh, he would like to know about this, but too late to fall asleep.
I did. I was bad when I woke up.
The patent for the inside frosted light bulb was issued in 1928 by Marvin Pipkin. The advantages of frosting the inside of the light bulb are less light absorption and collection of dust. What I mean by light absorption is the actual coating itself. It's what it is. And of course, then the bulb has the outside smooth surface, so not much can collect on it that way. So that's why all light bulbs are frosted on the inside.
Oh.
And the Queen of France, Marie Antoinette, was beheaded at the age of 37 in Paris, France in 1792. And a couple hundred years later, the best metal show ever is played, you know, performed at the same location she was beheaded.
I was just going to say something about that.
So that's our On This Day for October 16th. So are you ready to get into this?
Is you?
All right. Yeah, I am. So let's get going. So, like, as I said before, I tried to find timeline stuff with this. I had very little to go off with, but I wanted to do this story
for a while.
Mm-hmm. And then I had actually, like, when I mentioned when I first heard about it, I looked ahead of time just to see what day it was. And this is the first day that it came up. So that's been on pause for, like, 2 years.
On pause for 2 years? Why didn't you do it last year?
Because the 16th wasn't on a Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
That's why I didn't do it last year.
Smart.
A lot of the mass shooting episodes, I've been looking at all my true crime cases. Like, I've been looking at dates to see when they happen and see what came trying them close. Like, I could have done Howard Unruh in September, but I didn't. I was like, I already have the interest and I'm doing it now. The Luby's Cafeteria shooting is what we're doing this week. Luby's Cafeteria was founded by Bob Luby in 1947 in San Antonio, Texas, and his goal was to serve fresh home-cooked food that people would come back for time and time again and have an atmosphere that felt just like home. By 1958, there were 11 cafeterias across Texas. Luby's slogan is, "Tastes like Texas, feels like home." Luby's offers all-you-can-eat buffets and breakfast buffets at some locations, but most are served cafeteria style with dishes like liver and onions, chicken fried steak, bacon cheese chop steak, homestyle meatloaf and pot pies, baked tilapia, blackened tilapia. It's like on and on. Like when I looked at the menu of stuff, I was like, damn, this is a lot of shit
except for the liver. Well, I mean,
obviously,
onions.
Before the first one I listed,
my mom would eat that shit.
I know. I listed it in there because just for reactions out of you. Because I remember you telling me how your mom would eat liver and onions.
When we would go to Zender's in Frankenmuth, the best chicken in the world, and she would choose fucking liver and onions.
Right. One of these days when we go up that direction,
I would love to take you there.
Quit saying we're going and actually go there or go back to Tony's for a 3-pound BLT. Oh my God. If you've never been to Tony's or Bertrand, this is the only place on the planet I've ever seen where you can order a pound of bacon as a side.
A side. Usually a side is what, like 3, maybe 4 pieces? Yeah.
No, it literally says on the menu, a pound of bacon.
Yeah.
But at Luby's peak, though, there were 200 cafeterias in 11 different states by 1996, and now there are only 41 cafeterias left in operation. While looking up information for Luby's, I did find one Reddit comment that did amuse the hell out of me, and I'm going to share it with you. Someone did ask if Luby's is a buffet or what kind of style serving Luby's was. Is it a buffet, cafeteria? And one of the first comments was, it's the opposite of a buffet. They take food from your house until you starve to death. I don't know why. I just found it amusing to myself. So I was like, I'm going to add this in there.
Yeah.
So the Luby's cafeteria shooting happened in Killeen, Texas, which is located about 70 miles north of Austin, Texas, and about 60 miles south of Waco, Texas, which we all know what happened in Waco. other than the Branch Davidians, that was the site of the, you know, the one story of the train crash incident that I did last year, early last year, the year before.
The train crashes
for train crashes for entertainment. Yeah. No, that happened in Waco, Texas. The population of Killeen, Texas is 153,000 compared to a 64,000 in 1991. Its current population makes it the 19th most populated city in the state of Texas. Killeen is considered a military boomtown due to Fort Cavazos, then Fort Hood, when this took place near the city. Fort Cavazos is home to the 3rd Armored Corps, the 1st Cavalry, and many other military units. You know what a cavalry unit is?
No.
They're the ones on horses.
Oh.
Outside of Fort Cavazos, there isn't much heavy manufacturing, agriculture that I could find that supports the Killeen, Texas economy. So during the lunch hour on Boss's Day, October 16th, 1991, Louie's cafeteria in Killeen was packed with around 150 hungry people just going about their day. It was Boss's Day, and many of the people were there to celebrate with their managers and their bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Kirby Lack was meeting with Michael Griffith for lunch along with a group of another friends, and they were discussing life and death. When Lack told Griffith he was afraid that nobody would attend his funeral, Lack told him, "I love you and you are my friend. I will be there." And this is about the same time these two were having this talk of life and death. And in a sick twist of fate, around 12:40 p.m., a blue Ford Ranger comes smashing through the front window of the Louie's cafeteria and leaving people confused and in shock.
So they just drove right in?
Yep.
Okay.
Jumped a curb, just drove straight into the restaurant. Some people believe that the driver's brakes must have failed or had a heart attack until the driver shot Michael Griffith, Kirby Lack's friend, and yelled as he exited his truck, "All women of Killeen and Belton are vipers. This is what you've done to me and my family. This is what Bell County did to me, and to me, this is payback." He then pulled out a second pistol, started firing into those who were in the cafeteria, and he would circle the cafeteria, being selective on targets. The shooter was heard saying, "You bitch," to women before shooting them. For the next 12 minutes, this would be a lifetime. Across the dining room, Suzanne Hupp and her parents are watching in shock before her father chooses to rush the gunman in an attempt at trying to stop him. The shooter turns around to see her father rushing him and shot and killed him. And this would be the last time she would see both of her parents alive, when her mother would go over and cradle her husband of 47 years in her arms before she was shot and killed after she looked up and then back down away from the gunman. Hupp said, "As she cradled my father in her arms, cops began to arrive. They saw the gunman walk to my mother, and then they say she looked up at the gunman, put her head down, and he pulled the trigger, and that's how the cops knew which one was the gunman." Suzanne Hupp would survive the shooting by the actions of Thomas Vaughn, 20 years old at the time, who had this weird thought when the shooter started firing. His thoughts were, "How ugly this carpet was, and I'm going to die on this ugly carpet." In one of the interviews I did find, he said, "I was 349 pounds at the time, and I didn't get there by not eating desserts. If I had stopped for even 2 seconds to look at the desserts, I would have been right at the serving line where the car stopped." He would first try kicking through one of the windows, but this only drew the shooter's attention. Even in a rain of bullets, he still tried to get through this window, and he was amazed at how much a plate glass window could bend before it would break.
Mm.
Especially, he was like 6'5". Oh, 350 damn. Pounds.
He was a big dude.
Big Texas boy throwing everything he's got into this window, and it's not budging. That him trying to hit this window is what drew the attention of the shooter.
Right.
He also described the sounds of the shots were sounding like light bulbs were falling out. Some people thought it was a car backfiring at first until the shooting started. They realized there was a shooter.
Damn.
So him being this big Texas boy, being, you know, at 6 foot tall, almost 350 pounds, he would use his own body weight to create an exit for himself by crashing through the window finally. And this window was like 8 feet in size. So there's a lot of surface area to absorb all that energy into it.
Yeah.
So with his actions, dozens of people survive by going through the same window he finally was able to break through. He would only end up needing 8 stitches total from his actions that saved dozens of people.
I'd say the 8 stitches were worth it. Yeah.
Kirby Lack did survive by playing dead. And this is a quote from him from one of the interviews. "I had just smeared some blood on my face and I covered my face with my hand, hoping he would think I was dead. He kicked me. I didn't move. And then he reached down and stuck the barrel of the 9mm to the back of my head. And just as he pushed, I literally said my last prayer. I thought I was dead." But before the shooter could make a fatal shot at Kirby Lack, the police arrived and shot off to the side of Kirby Lack's head. He shot and it was deafening. Everything was like a ringing noise. I lay there for a second and opened my eyes and thought, "That jerk missed me. How do you miss?" Within the 12 minutes that this all took place, our shooter would end up coming in a standoff with the police, but he would eventually take the coward's way out after being shot twice by police in the abdomen and refusing to give up. They, you know, when police trying to get him to surrender. He is like, no, I want to shoot more people.
He said that?
He said, yep. He said, I want to shoot more people.
Wow.
But after being hit twice in the abdomen, he finally realized how the severity of his injuries, and he was going to go out on his own terms, unfortunately. And he did this in the bath by the in the back by the bathrooms where people were already hiding. And the shooter was George Pierre Henard. He would end up killing 23 people and injuring 27 in 12 minutes compared to what James Huberty did in 10 and a half.
Wow.
If I remember, I should have looked this up. I forgot. And he was using fully automatic weapons. But this man did this with 2 9-millimeter pistols.
Damn.
So here's the thing with a lot of the gun people, you know, wanting to ban assault weapons and whatnot. This man just killed 22 people in 12 minutes with 2 handguns. So you can ban as many assault weapons as you want. It's not going to matter. If somebody has the intent to do harm, they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I can step off my little tiny soapbox there for a minute.
You say your tiny soapbox?
My tiny little soapbox. Oh. This would be the largest mass shooting in U.S. history until the Virginia Tech shooting in 2007. If you were like me and your first thought was like, what about Columbine? There was only 15 deaths in Columbine when it happened. So our dipshit this week, or micropeen this week, George Pierre Henard, he was born October 15th, 1956 in Sayre, Pennsylvania, into a wealthy family. His parents' names I couldn't find anywhere, but his father was a surgeon and his mother was a homemaker for the time because, you know, 1950s, 1960s, yeah. You know, mom stayed home. He had 2 younger siblings since the age of 5. He graduated high school in 1974, and then he enlisted in the Navy for 3 years until he was honorably discharged, then worked as a merchant marine. He was discharged from the merchant marines May 11th, 1989, due to possession of marijuana and racial incidents. One of his former roommates said Henard hated blacks and Hispanics and would also call women snakes and make derogatory remarks about them arguing with his mother. This could be the cause a majority of his targets were women, even though he did tell one of the mother that was there with her child to get out with your baby before I change my mind. 15 of the 23 people he killed were women.
Okay.
In 1990, he did try to rejoin the Merchant Marines, but his reinstatement was denied, and he entered a drug treatment program in Houston, Texas. He was known to have stalked 2 sisters aged 23 and 19 at the time and wrote a 5-page letter to them, and part of his letter did read, "Please give me the satisfaction of someday laughing in the face of all those mostly white treacherous female vipers from those 2 towns being Killing, Texas and Belton, Texas, who try to destroy me and my family. You think the 3 of us can get together someday? Probably not, guy."
Like a menage a trois? Trois?
Yeah, not going to have one with 2 sisters, you fucking weirdo.
Yeah.
Investigators found out he had problems with women, but they believe part of the reason was due to his parents getting divorced in 1983 and believe the constant rejection and self-isolation was the main causes of why he did this mass shooting, which we've learned from previous episodes that a lot of these mass shooters go into self-isolation before they do their own thing. He was even said that from his previous classmates that he was never known to, he kept to himself quite a bit and he never was ever seen talking to a girl.
Was he just extremely shy? Guy or what?
Like, a lot of the background stuff on him, couldn't really find a whole lot, really. Like I said, this was difficult to find information on, but I wanted to do this, and I gave it my all to bring it this week.
I know. You're a deep diver, and not having that, you know, line of events
fucks made it up for very you. Difficult.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could have been, like, maybe if this guy had a fleshlight or, you know, that KFC Chikussy thing that keeps popping up around on Facebook. Probably could have changed a lot of... Could have changed a lot of... You know, of course, the history here, but
yeah,
probably not.
At least he'd get his frustrations out that way.
Right. Good Lord. My own thoughts in my head to fuck my life.
Care to share?
Oh, just, I don't know, for some reason, just the thought of him dressed as Colonel Sanders going to town on the KFC Chikussy that's been floating around on fucking Facebook recently. Have you not seen that?
The Chikussy, yes.
Yeah, I don't know why the fucking thought, I thought that popped in my head of Colonel Sanders hitting some shit like that.
Hitting some chicken.
Yeah, hitting some chicken like that. I don't know.
Chicken.
Oh, God.
Hitting some chicken.
So, yeah, if you're also one of her black cats on Twitch, this is how a lot of the weird shit pops up on there. It's because it just random shit that pops in my head. Kind of like how the whole Raveyard channel point thing ends with every time we touch. Don't ask me why. It just fucking popped in my head when I came up with the whole fucking idea.
I won't ask you.
But I know you won't ask, as I just told you. They believe that the tipping point was the night before, after he argued with his mother on the phone and while watching the coverage of the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings from the sexual harassment allegations against him from Anita Hill, which are both African-American, with him, or, you know, like his roommate saying, yeah, he hated African-Americans and Hispanics. When the interview with Anita Hill came on the TV, a manager of the burger joint where he was having, I'm assuming, his dinner came on, the manager did say he just stood up and started screaming, "You bitch, you bastards, you've opened the door for all women." Like I said, this guy's giving me like major incel vibes, basically.
What would he mean by that? Open the door for all women. Open the door, like the floodgates to be chopped down?
I'm not sure exactly. He didn't go, like, there wasn't many details on that. I tried to find out what that was supposed to mean. I don't know if he thinks it's so, because they're giving women a platform like this that they're going to step up a lot of things. I mean, we've seen the Me Too movement. I don't know if that's what it is. But they believe a whole lot of misogyny was part of the reason why he did this too as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Now, you said incel. What is incel?
An incel is involuntary celibate.
Okay.
So incel is like shorthand term for involuntary celibate. I've never heard of the term before until Time Suck with Dane Cummins. He did an entire episode on it, which, though, hearing his coverage on the incel culture / movement, I don't remember how we called it. These people believe they are undateable for the most part, and then they have all their own code words for things and whatnot, like Chad and Giga Chad and Stacey's is like their own slang term for men and women and whatnot.
Okay.
It's fucking weird. That's like a whole other episode to deep dive in some weird shit like that. But like, I can't remember where in Canada it is, but our friends at Dark Windows, rest in peace, if you guys are multiple listeners, you need to go listen to their most recent announcement on there. It's very heartbreaking. But
yeah.
But they did an episode on a mass shooter in Canada, which is considered incel zero, basically. You know, patient zero with zombies. Mm-hmm. This guy was considered incel zero.
Okay.
There's a whole lot into the whole incel thing. That's what I was thinking a lot of what this guy was like with his comments and whatnot.
Okay.
Some of the witnesses did say he looked calm and collected while he selected his targets, while he shot them, and his facial expressions showed as if he had been waiting to do this for a very long time.
Like he was excited by it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like he's finally getting to live out his dream, in lack of a better term. There were calls for changes in gun laws in the state of Texas, and not in the way you would think, because of how often, sadly, things like this are constantly happening today in 2024. Before this, it was actually illegal to have a gun on your person, and the shooting at Luby's was a prime example of why the people of Texas wanted this law changed. So, for me, like, basically, you to carry one in your purse, or me to conceal carry on me on a hip holster off my belt or whatever. It would have been illegal in the state of Texas in 1991 before this happened, from what I gathered.
Okay.
And Susanna Hupp would become one of the main advocates for getting this law changed because she did own a gun. She owned a .38. She first thought as like, I have a gun. And then she remembered her gun is locked in her car 100 feet away from where she's at. It's not in her purse.
Yeah. Damn.
If she would have possibly had her gun, I mean, if somebody probably tried this in Texas now, that count would probably be less than 10. And there'd be a pile of goo left on the floor to clean up at this point. Because there's a commercial I can remember, or maybe it's not a commercial, but somebody captioned it to being like shopping in Texas. Somebody popped a cork and everyone in there thinks it's a gun shot going off.
No.
So everyone, it must just be an old video of some sort, but... But, like, a cork pops, everybody turns around and pulls out their gun, and somebody captioned it, like, what it's like shopping in Texas or some stupid shit like that. And I know Family Guy's made fun of Texas in ways like that. Like, when they're on the run from somebody and they move to Texas and Brian goes in to buy a bottle of Jack Daniels and the store clerk drops a gun on the counter and he's like, what's the gun for? Oh, it's a state law in Texas. Every time you buy a bottle of whiskey, you get a free handgun.
Jesus.
But, you know, this was all prior to that. But why she didn't carry it on her in her purse, obviously, one, it's against the law, and she was a chiropractor, and she was afraid she would lose her chiropractor's license if she was caught with this gun on her.
Fair.
There is a memorial made from pink granite outside the Killeen Community Center with the names of those that were killed on October 16th, 1991. Luby's did reopen the Killeen, Texas cafeteria a year later, but they made changes to the building by filling the windows with bricks, so no more of the glass windows were open in this because... impossible, afraid of a repeat of something mm-hmm. like this happening. And that location did stay open until the year 2000 is when it finally permanently closed.
Is there a reason why it closed?
Like probably back when like the company was suffering, it was probably one of the lower performing Louis is my assumption of what happened there.
Gotcha.
I mean, given the location, probably not a whole lot of people went there afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair assumption.
But it did get reoccupied by a Chinese buffet afterwards in 2006. I think I might have just, that's a typo. 2006, 2007, mid-2000s, a Chinese restaurant took over the property.
Fucking Chinese buffets take over everything. Yeah. All the old country buffets that used to be around, like, they just are down the street from us. Chinese yeah. places now.
Now that you said it that way, I know if we're in another town that we go to from time to time, we're going to have to co-cruise to that shopping center just to see what's in there at this point.
By Best Buy?
No, not that Best Buy. The one by Best Buy, that was a Circuit City in that location. There's a strip mall over there where there was an old country buffet. And I know which one it is. We'll have to go cruise through there to see if you're right.
Oh, was it like where the Christmas tree shops are?
No, it's farther down.
Okay. I must be. It's on that same road, though, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's on that same road.
Okay.
We're not saying the name of the road because that gives us away.
Yep.
That like a small chunk of you have of you guys have our address anyway because of Christmas cards last year. Not like we're worried about you guys.
I don't know. I'm worried about that mini and that noodle.
I know. They might just show up randomly.
And then you like, put them together the and you got that mini noodle, and that's even more terrifying. Yep.
The minoodle.
Mini noodle.
The minoodle.
The minoodle.
But yeah, unfortunately, that was not as much detail filled as I was hoping to give you guys, but it was a story that I didn't want to bring to you. And things like this, I don't know if Sarah's ever noticed how I always check, see where exits are. Part of it's, you know, fire territory training from years ago that will never go away. You know,
it's probably a good thing to have for it to just be instinctual like that.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever noticed that I do it and why sometimes I'm always facing out into the dining room and I have my back turned to it.
Is that why I'm always staring everybody down? Or not staring everybody down, but got my back to a wall usually?
No, that's usually why I have my back to the
wall. No, I meant staring at a wall.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Because of my more situational awareness from trainings and things.
I'm not situationally aware.
I didn't say you were. It's just, it's how I am. I know it's been almost 10 years since I've been in the fire service, but
yeah,
some habits just don't die.
Like Ginger's incessant fucking meowing.
Yep. But if anybody wants a 20-year-old mouthy old lady cat that can't hear shit, let us know. Just kidding. She's with us until the very end.
Fuck. You are right. 20 years old. Oh my God.
Yeah. Anytime he's told Sarah, not Sarah, he's told anybody how old Ginger is, they're like in shock because of how old she is.
Yeah, I literally got her when I was 21.
I think she just stays alive now just to annoy the fuck out of me.
It's out of spite for sure.
Yeah, her obsession with me, she's like,
she is so obsessed.
She's been obsessed with me ever since I met her the very first time. And that even shocked Sarah the first time I went up to meet her parents and whatnot. That cat came up and sat next to me and has been up my ass ever since then.
Word.
She was like, that cat hates everybody.
At that point, she didn't hate everybody. But she definitely had her people that she didn't tolerate.
Right.
Like, she did not like my mom for some reason. And my mom had always been a cat lady.
Yeah.
But, like, she was fine with my dad.
It's like Salem now.
Fine with Amy. Well, fine with the oldest sister. Didn't like the middle sister, but shocker.
I'm getting an angry message over that.
Nah, she understands.
I know. I've seen it.
But, yeah. Like, she wasn't how she was when I first got her, where she wouldn't even let me touch her.
Yep.
But yeah, she loves the absolute shit out of David, and it's, I don't mean nothing to her no more, and I had her the fucking longest.
Yep.
But I don't exist.
But some of the things the survivors did say about this ever since that's happened to them, no matter where they go, they always check for exes. They have their children. Like, one of them, the Kirby Lackey, said that what I have my boys do when we go anywhere is it's like, I want you to close your eyes and you tell me where the exits are. Just because.
I mean, that's smart, though.
I mean, because of the PTSD of an event like this, it's never going to go away.
No.
You know, because, I mean, some people hid under tables and whatnot and everything and hid in the bathroom, places like that. But yeah, the PTSD of this event is never going to go away to them. It's going to get re-triggered every time one of these fucking happens. So I couldn't imagine. And hopefully you and I never have to go in one of these situations like that.
No.
And there's the one podcast, what was that like, that I've told you about mm-hmm. before, and I think I mentioned on here before. He actually talked to somebody about the one in Las Vegas at the country concert.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a rough listen to, you know, hearing it from somebody that survived it. Free shout out for What Was It Like, even though they're not going to know who us. But yeah, if you guys want to hear lots of stories from people from their perspective of survived traumatic experiences, like, go give it a listen.
Also,
there's like all sorts of different things. Like, he's even talked to one lady that survived the Aurora, Colorado shooting as well.
Yeah.
That would have been fun. And she survived because she was on a blind date with a veteran, and that's how she survived. Because he knew by counts, he's reloading, we got time to move.
Oh, smart. But also, we're doing pretty good at not ending up being on our own podcast.
No.
Because we don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
We don't do anything. Like, just makes it easy.
Well, we're always on our own podcast because we're here every day doing it.
You know what I mean?
I know.
I'm not talking about you and your demise, and you're not talking about me and my demise.
No. Oh, yeah, because if
and we don't have Lindsay or Noodle posting anything on, you know, in the Facebook group saying, hey, right. They both met their demise. It's because we don't fucking go nowhere. Yeah. You stay home, you stay safe.
And besides, if something were to happen to one of us, McCabe and Porium would come to an end.
I would hope so.
Because we can't do it with somebody else. There's no way we could replace either one of us on this. We started this together and it ends together.
Word. But it ain't today. Ha! Nope.
But this episode's going to end right about now. So I think it's time we get out of the Emporium for the day, Sarah. What do you think?
I agree.
So until next time.
Remember to creep it real. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.